na 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 la na 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 na. It's Le'Veon Rose. Because I'm keeping the theme of what my show is this week. I have on Parisian stand-up comic Sebastian Marx, who I didn't even know wasn't necessarily French. I think he's Argentinian, from New York, Westchester, the best Chester. And then followed a woman to Paris, which we all do. And hence, now he's in Paris. So a little background. I was in Paris over the fall, and I was in the very famous store Shakespeare and Company. While there, basically Shakespeare and Company is like kind of a expat sanctuary. I mean, they've also housed – they're famous for letting writers stay and work inside the facility. As you all know, especially growing 20s, Hemingway's Movable Feast, Sun Also Rises, all these books that Hemingway wrote because of that whole artist colony of Pablo Picasso and all the expats that formed in the 20s. In Paris, it's known for having great writers, Shakespeare and co. So I had to go because I consider myself a very low-level writer. Anyways, while there, I see this flyer. The flyer is for a quote-unquote New York comedy night. And it's a comedy show in English, and it's stand-ups that are regular stand-ups. And the reason why this is rare to me, because I've been around the world slightly, I'm not claiming to be Gulliver Travels, but I've been around enough to know that stand-up isn't the same everywhere else. In fact, I think stand-up here in America, the only place that I've heard about it translating in a decent way is the UK, Ireland, parts of Ireland, and maybe Montreal. I've done Montreal before. That being said, I saw this and I wanted to get on the show. Unfortunately, the show was happening after I was already going to be leaving town, so that wasn't possible. But I looked up the guy who was doing it, and him and I got to talking. Sebastian Marx, who was on the show this week, this is my guest, and him and I just really hit it off, and we were kind of talking shop. And literally, Sebastian is on the forefront of stand-up comedy in Paris. I mean, this is a newer thing in Paris, and it hasn't caught on like obviously like we have it here in the States, but it is a movement. Sorry, I'm a little excited. So I had to have Sebastian on, and we chop it up and we talk about the struggles that each comic faces, which are the same struggles in Paris, but you know, in a lot of different ways. So I really enjoyed talking to Sebastian. I think you guys will like it too. It's super interesting. If you're even into stand up in any way, shape or form, you'll find the whole movement very interesting. So enjoy. I'm a lucky dude. You know, I consider myself a very lucky man. Not only because I get to interview very beautiful women, but I also get to interview very handsome, talented men. And there's no exception to my guest today. It's Mr. Sebastian Marx from Paris. Hello. What's going on, dude?
Yeah. Originally from New York.
Oh, you're originally from New York?
Yeah.
Oh, I had no idea. Wow, this is the hour I'm already learning about you already. So
you thought you were interviewing a French guy, and now you're all of a sudden with a New Yorker.
Okay, so to give the audience a little context, they all heard about my Paris trip. While I was in Paris, I was in the very famous Shakespeare and Co., and I was walking around, and I saw this flyer. It said, New York comedians. And I go, oh, shit, I'm a New York comedian. I'm in Paris. They should know me. And I looked at it, and the date on it was a date that I wouldn't be in Paris at the time, but I still decided, you know, I fell in love with Paris, as many people do, and I decided, well, you know, I'm going to hit up this guy, Sebastian, and see what's up with him. And I checked out his shit. He's super funny. And I said, oh, we gotta talk. So now we're talking.
Here we are.
It's a thing of it's beautiful. So when you – okay, all right. This is – now that I know you're from New York, this is far more intriguing. Being a new – so the only thing I've ever done outside of the States is I've played Montreal, where Montreal, everyone is English and French. And when I was doing the shows, they were laughing – but I would notice sometimes I would lose them on certain pop culture references.
Sure.
And that's understandable. But I can't even imagine – I get that your show, the one I was looking at, is based towards, hey, if you come here, you're going to be seeing people that basically do a New York style of comedy, which technically that's just being very specific for Parisians. New York style of comedy is basically what everybody's doing here in the States now anyways. They're trying to be very observant and blah, 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 and that's what you're kind of promoting, right?
Yeah, and I mean, and you have to understand that stand-up is a very recent phenomenon in France. So it's just kind of like when I say New York style comedy, I mean, just general in any French person's mind, it's just basically stand-up. Mm-hmm. Getting into the specifics of whether it's like observational or self-deprecating, that is very, you know, we know about that because we're American, but yeah. French people don't make that distinction yet. But
go ahead, sorry.
We're working on it.
No.
Educating the French people about stand-up.
Okay, so let's start from the beginning just so I kind of give the audience a little bit of background on you and I can learn about you. Why did you move to France?
Well, let me explain first of all my name, Sebastian Marx. Sebastian, you probably thought I was French because of my name, Sebastian. Actually, my parents are from Argentina.
Okay.
So it's Sebastian, so it's Spanish. Mm-hmm. And so I was born and raised in New York. I was born and raised in Westchester. And I went to school in Boston. Out of college, I met a French girl, and I followed her to France. I wasn't even in Paris before. I was in the south of France.
You fucking romantic, you. Look at you, all that romance.
Yeah, romantic is also another word for stupid, but they go hand in hand. And so I followed a French girl. You know, I had no idea how long I was going to stay here. And you turn around one day, it's 12 years later. It's been 12 years now that I'm here. And so, yeah, and I did stand-up when I was in New York. Uh-huh. I did stand-up when I was in Boston. And when I got to France, I didn't speak the language at all. I took Spanish at school. You know, I had you know, I knew vache and fromage were like the two French words I knew, and then just had to learn everything from scratch. But I was, you know, also looking for the adventure of that, you know. Yeah. And
so hold on, let's take a break. So this is what's great. So you, not only are you not even French, but you're a kid from fucking Westchester, the Bestchester, and
the Worcester,
and you don't know any French. And now, just for the listeners here in America that literally don't travel at all and you stay in whatever town you're in, to give you some insight about France, they don't necessarily enjoy you if you don't speak their language. It's not something they're polite about. This is true. This is pretty fair.
Yeah, I mean, it's the key to everything. But I mean, to be fair, also, if you don't speak English and you go to America, you're not going to integrate very well either. I mean, language is key, and especially for the French.
Yes.
So yeah, I mean, I definitely felt, and I have a joke about this in my show, like I felt like I was like, I became a 2-year-old again. You know, like, because I met my ex, because she's now an ex, in the States, and she spoke English very well. And so our relationship was born out of English, you know, like, so we talked English together. And then when we came to France, all of a sudden, I was starting to learn French. And so I became, a 2-year-old again, because all of a sudden I was dependent on her. Hey, can you get me that thing? You know, like, and so it was a really weird experience. And of course, it didn't help the relationship.
No,
because
I'm sure.
All of a sudden, you know, when I came here, I was, 24, and all of a sudden from 24 I became, you know, like 2, and so it's a very, you know, for her, you know, that's not easy.
I can only imagine, because I spent 10 days in Paris and I loved it, and I'm not like an easy traveler, so it's not like I'm just saying that because it's Paris, and I'm not gonna lie, I mean, the first few days I wasn't crazy in love with Paris because it reminded me a lot of New York and I felt like I was home. But then as I started to get, you know, that's the one beauty of Airbnb, everybody, if you stay in a neighborhood where you can be a part of the neighborhood and feel like you're a part of the culture, do that, because that'll make you actually feel like you're going on a journey. And that's what I did, and I can attest to what he's saying in a very small way. Not being able to communicate properly with the people around you is infuriating. It's depressing. After like 10 days, I was like, I just really want to, because I'm a communicator just like you are. Like, I get paid to communicate. Yeah. So when you take that away from me, you've taken so much out of my character. It's not even funny, right?
Yeah. And also, it's just like meeting people, like making friends. I felt like the retarded younger brother that everyone like felt obliged to bring along, you know, just like, okay, fine, you know, because he's nice and he's cute, you know, we should, you know, make the effort and bring him along to, you know, whatever the concert or whatever thing we're doing. And so I was just like, yeah, okay, thank you guys, you know, and with my 3 words. But of course you have the intellect of a, you know, 20-year-old, and so just like, you just all the time.
You can't even express yourself.
That was a bit hard, especially for someone like me who was, you know, did stand-up comedy and, you know, has usual sense of humor to communicate. Just forget sense of humor if you're in that stage. Like,
it's out the door. You're done. Yeah, it's up to, your dick is cut off.
Exactly. Unless you're doing miming, you know.
Which is very famous in France.
Which is very well known in France.
It's a respected form of art there. So
that's probably why it's just the American tourists who've gone over there. Don't speak the French language.
So you're – how long until you feel like I guess let's – two-part question. How long until you feel comfortable going out on your own and expressing yourself? And then when do you feel fluent enough to start writing jokes that you think will translate?
Well, I mean, I really noticed a big leap in my French when I started to actually work in French. Like, because when I first got to France, of course, the logical thing job-wise is to teach English, mm-hmm. you know. And that's the funny thing about coming to France as an English speaker. It's like, you know, everyone's obsessed with English. Everyone wants to learn English today. And so, you know, and English was one of my worst subjects in school. But just because I was speaking it for 25 years, all of a sudden I'm an expert.
Yeah, you finally had a leg up on people.
Exactly, for the first time. And so, when I started to actually work, I actually worked as like a waiter in a restaurant that, you know, in a French restaurant, everyone around me was French, no crutch anywhere. That is when, boom, I really kind of made progress because I had to open up my ears. Mm-hmm. So, you know, really kind of pay attention because if you're taking orders, you don't want to screw up the order.
And French is a fast language, right? I mean, did you speak any – you said you took Spanish and
your parents were from Argentina. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, my parents are from Argentina, so yeah, I definitely had the Spanish.
Does that help you at all?
No.
Okay.
No, I was very disappointed. I thought it was like, oh, yeah, French will be easy because I know Spanish. Not at all. I think like Italian might be easy if you speak Spanish.
Sure.
But French, there's so many – exceptions, so many vowel sounds that don't exist in Spanish, so many, the way of writing it is totally different. I mean, of course, just both Latin languages, but, you know, the conjugation is different. So mm-hmm. it's different enough that it didn't really help that much. So, I really started to make progress when I started to work. And then after a while, I, you know, kind of missed the stage. Because it was been like 2 or 3 years in, I was just like, you know, I did stand up in the States. So I was kind of missing this experience. Mm-hmm. And it was like, hey, okay, I'm speaking French well enough that I think I can at least memorize phonetically pretty much a 5-minute set. And so I started to perform in French. And that, I mean, at first it was rough because it was just like I had no rhythm. You know, I was just, you know, I memorized phonetically these words. Even if I knew what they meant and I wrote them down, because it was the jokes I wanted to tell, but I had to ask, you know, my girlfriend, like, how is this correct? She had to correct my grammar, and then so it wasn't spontaneous, it wasn't natural.
It's your story right now is terrifying to me because I feed myself off of jokes, right? That's how I eat. That's how I make money, and the thought of having to rewrite my act in another language where. A lot of my act, you know, I mean, it's a lot. It means something. It has meaning. It has punchlines. But some of it's, you know, the simple stuff that people don't realize about stand up. The way your face looks when you're saying it. The way you emphasize a certain word and that power. It has power because in that language it has power. And then you kind of take that away. That is bare bones in it, man.
I mean, yeah, the thing is, once you strip away cultural references, language play, you know, you get down to this bare idea, you know. I mean, of course, my first angle initially was what it's like to be an American in France, and still is, of course, you know, to some extent, where just this kind of, the first things I wrote were what I observed, especially about the French language or French culture, and so... But yeah, these ideas I had to get down to the essentials, you know, and I couldn't really use wordplay because I didn't understand. And of course, some jokes bombed where in my mm-hmm. mind, in my English mind, I was like, this is clear. And they just didn't get it, either because the word was awkward or my rhythm was off or I didn't make the right facial expression, as you said, in the right time. And so, I mean, it's so subtle when you realize how mm-hmm. subtle comedy is and how it's, you know.
Really good, brilliant comedy. You're completely right. Really good, brilliant, on-point comedy. The subtlety is what truly, truly makes it brilliant. It's those little details that the audience doesn't even notice. It's more subconsciously they pick up on it that makes them laugh. And that's because we're trying to spark an involuntary response, you know, out of human beings, which is the most difficult thing ever, which people probably take for granted quite often because everyone thinks they're so fucking funny. But in reality, you're not. Trust me. Hey, everybody, you're not funny, all right? I get paid to be funny. I'm telling everybody at home you're not funny. That alone, like, it makes you – I mean, I'm telling you, man, knowing now that you're an American that went there and had to learn how to do stand-up in French, Dude, because here, people come here, like, there's a guy I know here, I won't name his name, but he's from another country, and he does really well because he just makes a joke about how he has an accent, and then does this thing, and people, because he's so different, are like, oh, this is great, right?
Yeah.
Does that happen for you out there, or no?
Well, definitely, I mean, but that's always the case, and pretty much any industry, you know, when you think about it, you know, there's one thing is talent, another thing is originality, and that is... Well, what was my big disadvantage when I first came, which was, you know, my accents and not being able to really perform because I wasn't comfortable with the language, became my advantage eventually. You know, where it just became, okay, this guy, oh, wait, he's an American, but he speaks French well enough. You know, he knows our culture well enough because, you know, after several years, it was like, I know how you guys think now. I know what, you know, what words are funny, what you use. And so that became, of course, indeed an advantage because I stand out. I get on stage, you know, even today, I say like one or two sentences. Everyone's like, okay, this guy, where's he from? Why does he have this accent? Mm-hmm. So that's definitely a step up because people listen to me. Whether they laugh right away, they at least they're like, okay, he's weird, you know, and attract attention. And so that's definitely a step up. That's definitely like an advantage. If I'm going in between, like, on a showcase with, like, five or six other comics, you know, all of a sudden I
come up. So they do showcases out there. Like, that's let's touch on that for a second. Here in the States, everyone understands that comedy is a big form of art here. Everyone loves stand-up, blah, blah, blah. But in Paris, how is that even broken down? Do they have comedy clubs? How do you even – one, do they have a French connection of comics that work the circuit in France? And if they're – what is that circuit? And then ultimately when it comes to the English show that you do, is that one of the only ones that exist in Paris that you know of? Because I didn't see any besides yours.
Yeah, well, okay. I'll first explain, like, in general, comedy – well, comedy exists everywhere. But comedy, in the French traditional sense, is coming from theater. It's coming, coming from things like vaudeville, like early 20th century stuff. But even more, you know, end of 20th century, it's been coming from theater. So lots of the one-man shows, what they call a one-man show here is a comedy show, is originally theater-based, meaning...
Like Eddie Izzard is probably very big, not to cut you off, but Eddie Izzard, he kind of does a one-man show history type stand-up. It's not traditional stand-up, but it's stand-up mixed in with this,
yeah,
right? It's kind of performance.
But the difference between Eddie Izzard and someone who would be a traditional French one-man show comic is that Eddie Izzard, despite everything, is himself. He's not necessarily, like, when I saw, we'll say, like... it's sketch here. It's like one-man sketch.
Okay.
Traditional here. So meaning... they're more actors. They're coming more from the acting side of comedy, where the Americans in stand-up vein is coming more from the writing.
Okay.
You know, it's like on joke writing. Where here, so the original people were doing like, they would come out, they would be performing, they would be dressed up as a grandma, you know, and they'd have like a 10-minute sketch where they're pretending to be a grandma. The fourth wall exists.
Yeah.
So they're not talking to the audience, you know, but they're saying like, oh, they're complaining about their children or, you know, their grandchildren. And then the stage goes black. The guy runs off, gets dressed up as another character, comes back on, lights go up. It's another sketch. It has nothing to do with the first sketch, you know. And so it's traditionally that's what a one-man show was like. Stand-up is now starting to become more and more popular here. It's been about 15 years.
Why is that, though? What can you attest to that being?
Well, one main reason why it became really popular is there's this one comedian named Jamel Debbouze, who is, I don't know if you saw Amelie, but he's, if you remember Amelie specifically, there's one guy who works in a vegetable stand, and he has a helper, a North African helper, I think he's from Morocco, and he's kind of like a half-wit. And that's Jamel Debbouze, but in real life, he's not halfway. He's very funny. And so that character, that actor, is actually a very famous stand-up comic. And what he did was he started his own comedy club, which is the only thing that actually resembles an American-style comedy club called the Jamel Comedy Club. And he kind of was inspired by, I would say, black comedy in the States. You know how the African-American community kind of used stand-up comedy as a voice, as a way to talk about racism that wasn't being talked about. You know, people like Pryor, people like Eddie Murphy.
We're using Paul Mooney,
And then later, like the Def Comedy Jam, you know, giving black people a voice through comedy. He did a similar thing to the big minority in France, which is North Africans. So originally, this is kind of what it did. Was to give this population, which really didn't have a voice, a stage where they can talk about it in a funny way. And so this was actually broadcast on French television. This was like about like 10 years ago now. And it, you know, was huge. All of a sudden, it was like, all of a sudden, oh my God, we have North Africans here in France. And they were making jokes about this conflict, you know, these issues that we're not talking about. And so this was really the you know, considered the birth of popular stand-up comedy here. And what's ironic is that now stand-up comedy has kind of a bad reputation, or because when people now think stand-up comedy, they think automatically to Jamel Comedy Club, and you have to be now North African to do it. But they don't understand that stand-up comedy is actually as varied as the comics.
Like here in America, where you're like, it would be the equivalent of us only associating comedy with BET's Comic View, where it's not terribly original and it's all black people. Yeah, okay, yeah.
It's exactly that. And you know, the comics who still now perform at this club, for example, have very similar jokes. You know, talk about where they're from and you know, the difference between French people and North Africans, or mm-hmm. you know, their family, how their family works, and how a French, typically traditional French family works. Yeah. And so you know, it's very similar in that regard. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting, you know, as a guy coming from the States, to see all this and to see how it's like, you know, it's several decades behind the States. So in their evolution of in their stand-up, well, it's normal. They started later.
Yeah.
You know? And but it's interesting. But that's also what makes it exciting. It's that we're here. You know, I'm seeing all this happening before my
it's
eyes.
It's like you're from the future. It's like you're from the future. Really, it really is.
Kind of, yeah. But I mean, I don't want to sound pretentious. Like, I know everything and you guys don't know anything.
Well, no, in the sense that if you can figure out what – like, because you can think as a Parisian now because you've been there over 10 years, which in my mind makes – I'm an official New Yorker. I've been here over 10 years. So you understand how they think and you understand how Americans think, and you can smash them together and realize how you can cultivate the art form to make it interesting for them and bring them up to speed, you know?
Yeah. I mean, what's starting to become more and more popular now in the stand-up world here in France is self-deprecating humor, because it's not easy to pull that off in France. I guess also France has a culture of, you know, it's a Latin culture, so there's this aspect, like, you have to kind of look good mm-hmm. and have this kind
it's
of
very vain.
Of, like, yeah. I'm cool doing it. Where in the States, especially, like, you know, New York, I don't know if this is kind of a Jewish culture of, like, self-deprecation, and you know, that's not that popular here yet. Mm-hmm. And it's just starting to, and that's fun to see that there's more and more comics really just, you know, talking about how depressed they are, you know, because before, the French comics weren't really doing that yet. Mm-hmm. And now they're starting to, and that's cool. That's fun.
So when you're, okay, so you are 3 or 4 years into your tenure as a Parisian, and you decide, hey, I kind of got a hang of this language, let me try to hit the stage. And at what point do you go, you know, I'm going to create my own show where I can actually express myself and specifically market the expats from America and maybe get them in a room?
Yeah, well, I mean, there are two things. You know, I have full hour show, and I also have a showcase that I host. And the showcase that I host was actually I started doing before I had a full hour show. And so I was just working the club circuit, the French stand-up.
How many clubs in Paris or around Paris that you play?
Well, the thing is that there aren't really clubs in the American traditional sense of the word. They're more theaters. Because France is coming from a theater culture, people who do stand-up showcases just do them in theaters and or in a back room in a bar, for example.
Yeah, you know, I know
but,
that one.
But there aren't, you know, many clubs that have been built and are here to just stand up, like, you know, Carolines or Gotham.
So you're playing like 200 seat like theaters where big performances happen, and you're there trying to what? How many people come to those shows usually?
Well, the thing is, the theater can be anything, because I've been quite surprised, but theater can be a 25 seater. So
it doesn't take much.
Yeah, I mean. You know, and it could be really shitty conditions. And so, no, I mean, just the word theater I know is impressive in an American stuff, but no, theater can be really like a garage that's been transformed. So, no, it doesn't mean much. But it's just, I'm saying in the sense that it's not like the audience is sitting in a row,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're not sitting at a table.
No drinks really being served. Yeah.
No drinks.
Which is awesome, actually. I'm actually love that, to be quite frank.
But at the same time, there's in the States, we have that culture where because of the waitress coming around, there's more of like this interaction with the audience that the French audience they're just getting accustomed to that. You know, because about 10 years ago when stand-up was just first happening, they didn't even understand that a comic was talking to them. You know what I mean? They're like, is he talking to us or is he playing a character? You know, kind of thing. And so now, of course, they're getting used to that. And so that's fine. But it's still in these theaters that are, row after row. And so that's an interesting kind of mix. And I forgot the question. But
basically the second part of the question was, when you run your own shows now, when you're doing your own thing, when you put together this show, what kind of response do you get now? Do you get people that come to the show now? Is there a lot of expats that show up?
I remember I was explaining. So I was running the circuit. That's why I was talking about the Paris circuit. Mm-hmm. And so there are many nights that like open mics or showcases of French stand-up comedy now that exists in Paris all over the place. It's now a burgeoning scene. And so I was working this circuit, and one of the club owners, knew that I was American. He asked me to start an English comedy night. And I was like, yeah.
Amazing. Totally. Yeah.
And so I started that like 6 or 7 years ago. And it was called the New York Comedy Night. And, to give this kind of feel of, okay, this is American comedy in English in Paris. And so I started doing that. And then after a while hosting the show, I gathered an hour and now do my own, I have a one-man show in French and in English, both languages, and I also still host New York Comedy Night. And so the people who come to the show are mixed. Mm-hmm. Lots of French people, because people who are fans of stand-up comedy know that it's coming from the States, are fascinated with American stand-up. You know, thanks to the internet now, you can download so many stand-up shows. Mm-hmm. The new generation of French kids, like 30 and under, are growing up with American television series. They're not dubbed, they're subtitled, so they're absorbing English. So they're really starting to understand English much more than the old generation mm-hmm. did. So they're, they're watching Seinfeld, they're watching Louis C.K., they're watching John Mulaney, and they're liking it, mm-hmm. And so they're curious to see, there's English comedy here in Paris too. And so I get lots of French people who are
that come in to check it out. Let me ask you something. Have they adopted yet? Sorry, didn't mean to cut you off. Well, just to let everybody in the audience know, I'm talking with Sebastian through Skype, and he's in a cafe in Paris. So there is nothing more Paris than what we're doing right now. We're killing it right now on all four fronts. So have they adopted the kind of format that we do here in America, where they'll have a headliner for the weekend and an opener and kind of do it that way? Or basically everything's just kind of like a showcase? There's not much money to be made for stand-up. Does anybody come from America and pop in on the shows and can make a little bit of cash while they're out there? I mean, how does it work out there now?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, no, we don't really have the same setup in the sense, we don't have a visiting comic for a weekend, partly because we're in Paris, and so, any comic who is anybody is already in Paris. So mm-hmm. the people who are well-known, I'm talking about the French language, are already here, and they're installed, and they're not only here for the weekend, they're here for, they perform like 3 or 4 times a week, every week. Mm-hmm. And so if I have a visiting comic, the main issue, unfortunately, is I can't really offer much of a budget for someone. I can't bring someone over from New York, mm-hmm. seeing, how much I can't pay for the flight and hotel, unless the person is Jerry Seinfeld. Sure. It's someone that every French Joe Schmo knows
to pack in a room.
And Jerry Seinfeld's coming to Paris, he's not going to get in touch with me. He probably have tons of
agents. Come on, Jerry, call Sebastian. Jeez.
So that's kind of been my issue. Is if I want to fill a room, a big enough room that someone who has a name deserves. I mean, for example, Jim Gaffigan got in touch with me 2 years ago, and it's like thinking of coming to Paris because I think he was doing a little tour in Europe, and I was like, but then right. He was like, well, what kind of room could I offer him? He's like, I could only, I started to just kind of ask in my circle of friends who knows Jim Gaffigan, and hardly anyone did. So that's this kind of thing that's frustrating for me, is because so I said I can probably get you in on 140 seater, which is an insult to him, what I mean? But that, I had to be honest. There's he's not known here. Yeah. He's just by the 1%, 0.5% of the fans of American comedy might know who he is. But even mm-hmm. American expats, at least 50% of them didn't know who he is. So that's, I can't really fill a room based on someone who's, if he's not known, they have to just trust me. And I can get some people in, but I can't fill a 1,000-seater based on that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so you're basically saying that someone has to be ultra famous for them to do decently well in Paris as far as numbers go. And even then, most comics probably won't want to do it, because why would you want to go up there and risk bombing if your whole act is based kind of in English? You don't know if you're going to go there and tank half the time.
Either that, or, you know, go to London where you can fill a 2,000
Or even Ireland. I've done Ireland, yeah.
Yeah, or, you know, any English-speaking country where everyone knows who you are. You come, you know, why would you go to Paris, perform in a 100-seater, earn, you know, 500 euros for an hour show that you could sell for God knows how much in another country that's in English-speaking country. So I think that's part of the problem. But yeah, I mean, the French young generation is really getting accustomed to stand-up and getting more and more into it, and so perhaps that will change.
You're on the upswing, though, man. I feel like – so I'm reading this very famous book called Outliers. I know I'm behind, guys, but, you know, whatever. My education started at 30. So I'm reading this book.
I'm behind you, though.
Well, it's a great book about opportunity is a lot – people kind of look at success in this very romantic way, basically. Like, we, you know, obviously these people are talented and hardworking, the Bill Gates of the world and all this stuff. But no one really focuses on the true reason for their success, which a lot of it is right place, right time, and opportunity. And I feel like you're in a position with comedy, being that you're a young enough dude and you're a guy who knows the market, that you can actually, if you work hard enough at it and you get the right opportunities, take comedy in Paris and build it and be kind of the face for it. Is that something that you've stumbled upon and agree with, or are there other guys like you out there doing it? I mean, I'm kind of, what's the situation?
Well, since I've been running this comedy night for 6 years now, there's now a scene. So that's what's cool, is that now, you know, I've attracted slowly but surely lots of French comics who wanted to perform in English, because also they're fascinated with the States and they're, you know, always dreamed of performing in English. And so lots of French comics perform on my English comedy night, but also lots of expats like me, you know, guys from England, from the States, who are living here and, you know, wanted to develop stand-up comedy. And now, so there's a scene of like 20, 25 or so comics who now run nights all over the place. And so pretty much every night of the week, there's another comedy night, whether it be an open mic or showcase in English. Mm-hmm. And so now there's a scene. And, but I mean, yeah, of course I was the first one here. And so I'm kind of this ambassador of it, I guess. But I mean, I think more where my career is more is the American performing in French. I think that is more where I have something that is interesting. I mean, the thing is, the English stuff is great, but it's limiting as far as my career in France because of the language barrier. If I were ever to go on French, I mean, I am on French television. I do a weekly segment that's kind of like every week I go on a show that's the French equivalent of The View. I don't know if it's like a girl, like panel of women.
Yeah.
And I come on once a week and I talk about America, you know, this week in America. And so like, yeah, often I talk about the election or, you know, the Apple FBI thing, you know, whatever is going on. I do like a 4-minute segment. And all of this stuff would not be possible if I didn't speak French, because this isn't French. It's French television. I have to speak French. So the English stuff is pretty limited for the time being in France. So it's great, you know, and I develop it. And there's, you know, I can have this tourist, you know, flow, and it can, you know, I can, it helps my English show. But if I want to really make it onto like the media here, everything has to be in French.
And that's what you're trying to do now. Just for people at home, you're staying in France. I'm assuming you love it at this point, but also you're tied. You got to stay in Paris, right? At this point, you're kind of stationed there for the long haul, I would assume.
Yeah, I mean, well, for several reasons. I mean, well, because I've been building a career here. So, I mean, like, if I were to go back to New York, for example, it would be great. I miss New York and I love New York, but I would starting over in many aspects. Of course, not stage experience, but joke wise, and, you know, getting back into the American style of humor and also just relationships. As you know, as a comic, so much works with like who you know, can you call, you know, like I'm at a place now where in Paris, I call up anyone. It's like, hey, can I get on your night tonight? And you know, unless they're totally full, they'll get invite me out, which is, you know, a nice place to be.
It is.
And so, and you know, I'm also performing the theater I'm performing in. It's a cool place. You know, it's, I'm getting people. So yeah, I could leave. I could go other places. But yeah, I would, career-wise, pretty much start from scratch. And I mean, another big reason I'm stuck here is kids. I'm I'm a French girl. I have two kids. And honestly, for raising kids, France is pretty awesome. Education's free. Healthcare's free. Lots of those worries that you have in the States when, you know, when you think about kids, I remember, you know, it's just like when you think about kids and just like price, you just think of the price of your kid more than the joy of raising it. Just like how much is it going to, you know, you think about saving up for education when your baby, you know, you have a 1 year old, she's like, how am I going to pay for this education in 18 years? All that stuff, you don't think about in France, and that's a nice relief.
Is the job market, because you're not going to, I mean, what's the top of the ceiling in France for entertainment? It would be to be on TV, and that would pay you X amount of dollars. I'm not even sure what that would, like, I have an idea what people make here in the States when they finally get on something big or whatever, or even something small that's just kind of an every week thing. You're still, I know, kind of the general budget for that. When you're out there, what's top of the ceiling for you? And as far as the job market goes, because you're in a position where you have to work a day gig, I'm assuming to some degree, unless you found something that actually relates to entertainment that you can do. I know, because I was just in Paris and a friend of mine lives out there. She was mentioning to me how hard it is to actually find a job, especially when you're from America. Now, obviously, she's very new to Paris, so it's harder for her.
Yeah.
So what? Give me kind of an insight to like the daily routine here for you.
Well, I mean, I'm a professional comic. You know, I don't have a day job. I mean, my day job is promoting, you know, getting writing stuff, and especially you're writing for my television segment, which is a weekly thing where I have to produce 3 or 4 minutes of material every week, so that, you know, it does, and in French, so, you know, it is work. So talking about the benefits you have in France, there's this status here that's called intermittent spectacle, which is a status which is kind of unemployment, which is a kind of weird way to put it, but for people who work in artistic fields. So it's pretty much, there's something in place, it's kind of like funding for the arts.
Wow.
So if you are working a certain amount of hours within a year, you have this kind of, let's say it's a license, it's not a real license, but you get this license that shows like I'm an official artist. It's kind of silly, but like you get the legitimacy to say that you are, you know, you prove that you're working as in that field. So I mean, it's mostly everything related to theater or stage stuff. And so I'm working enough that I get enough hours, you know, to prove that I'm a working comic, a working artist. And so based on that, if I don't work, like if there's a month that goes by, I really have a shitty month where I don't get gigs, then the government gives me that unemployment. Like the money that I've been kind of saving up comes back to me automatically. Mm-hmm. And so like they ensure, at least for the following year, you know, that I have this unemployment for as
and
an
all
artist.
You got to
so,
do is keep meeting the minimum hours.
Exactly.
Okay. Wow, and that's incredible.
So they take into account, which is very intelligent, they take into account that an artist or a comic or an actor is going to have 1 month where they work their ass off, and then, you know, the next month where they're not going to have anything. And so they take that into account and kind of equalize that for you, you know. They're pretty much playing the role of your intelligent dad, you know. Like,
sure.
Like taking all the money you make for a year and say, okay, next year be careful, you know, you might have a shitty month. And if you do, I'll be there to give you money. You know, that's pretty much in general, you know, in short, kind of what's going on.
So it allows you to hone your craft. I mean, that's the biggest thing is that a lot of people in America take for granted that they don't understand that, you know, these comics that you see every night, a lot of these guys are breaking their balls for 12 hours at a day job just to make ends meet, and then they have to go write their craft. This allows you to actually think about what you do all day.
Yeah. Well, all day, I mean, what takes lots of time besides the kids, which is obvious, but like promotion sucks. I mean, I hate it, and I'm starting to have help with that more and more. Like I'm now someone who's a producer is going to help me with that.
What kind of promotions out there besides the social media and Twitter and all that? I know you guys put flyers out. How much do you do that? How much do you paper the streets with your show?
No, I don't. I stopped doing flyering. I mean, just today in the modern world, I do more.
It's kind of useless,
right,
at this point?
Yeah. I mean, you know, not.
I mean, I found it through a flyer.
That's great. Like Shakespeare & Co. is a great place because we know that I mean, the people who take flyers are usually tourists.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because they're the ones who are curious, who have their eyes open to stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a guy on the street, you know, just think of New York. Like, how many people are going to take a flyer? If you exchange your hands with a flyer in New York, they're not going to. So, it's social media. And but, you know, promotional stuff has been going pretty recently. So that do much anymore. Social media promotion is now more by doing like a little video that I would put on YouTube, you know, that is a funny angle, or, and you know, that's now how you attract people to your show. Mm-hmm. And so doing those kinds of things. But as I said, yeah, like the weekly segment on television takes up a decent amount of time. And but yeah, I mean, I'm spending most of my time in
When you do your hour and you're doing this hour in French, it's more, you said, more kind of one man show esque. Is that right?
No, my stuff is stand up.
So you're doing like a one hour stand up show in French. Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
So do you have a lot of?
When I said like the whole sketch thing, that's like traditional French one man show comes from that. But now many people are doing a full hour show of stand up as if it was American stand up. That's totally happening.
Great.
So,
because that's my question. I'm assuming because there is a limited amount of people you can promote to in a certain degree. I mean, I'm sure it jumps up a little bit here and there as far as repeat customers. There's probably a lot of repeat people. Do you find yourself, like, I know for me, if I have a lot of fans that keep coming out to one show, I don't necessarily feel the pressure to change it, because if I'm working on something, that's just the reality of my job. I have to work on the joke to make it right. Do you, yep, doing that hour over and over again, do you find yourself being like, fuck, man, so-and-so is here again, or I recognize these faces again, which is great, but now I feel like they've seen this act 50 times. Like, how do you feel about that? Do you have those same things?
I think I'm probably as torn as you are. I mean, in the sense that you want to do both. I mean, because, yeah, I hate someone, you know, who's there again and we'll see the same joke. But at the same time, if the person's there again, especially for my 1 hour show, it's because they liked it. But mm-hmm. at the same time, yeah, I don't, you know, I would like to offer some other stuff. But at the same time, like, if I have 20% of the people who are return customers and 80% who are there for the first time, you know, it's
you play the majority.
I play the majority, and yeah, I'm going to kind of favor the best jokes.
Because that's what's interesting. Is that you are doing something new there, right? And the thing is, even here, people still ask me, are you going to do the same jokes? So I can only imagine like what they think over there.
Well, the thing is, like, I think people don't realize how hard it is to build up an hour of solid stand-up comedy.
It's excruciating, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, people who see you, they're like 2 months later, they come back, they're like, hey, so your 1 hour show, even your 15-minute set, is it going to be the same? Well, you know, it's only been 2 months, you know. But for people who are non-stand-up, they're like, oh, well, 2 months is a lot of time to write material, because they just imagine us just, you know, every day writing, and we know automatically what's funny or not, you know. And so they don't know the work behind it. And so, but yeah, I mean, either way, of course, I think like any comic, after a while I get sick of jokes and I want to get new blood in there. But at the same time, it's, you know, it's kind of this balance between, mm-hmm. you know, if I'm going to put new jokes, they might be weaker, and I don't want to necessarily put my show at risk, you know. Mm-hmm. I'll have a 5-minute week set if I know that I have a 5 other minutes that is solid, even if I've been doing it for a few years. Yeah. So yeah, it's that's always a tough
so it's
thing.
The same. And so, that's great. Yeah, it's like a parallel.
I mean, and the Parisian comics, the young generation who are doing stand-up are being confronted with these same issues. So mm-hmm. it's interesting.
That is interesting. So before I wrap it up with you, I just want to touch real quickly on the attacks that happened out there and how that affected not only the city for you, specifically as being an American who's very familiar with terrorism, because, you know, 9/11, we're about the same age, so we understand, like, that was kind of coming about when our early 20s.
Yeah.
As a stand-up, I know a lot of guys, it took them a while to start writing jokes that were based around what they faced in 9/11. How is it going out there for you? I mean, I literally left about 10, 15 days before that happened, and it happened in the neighborhood I was staying in. So I want to know how it affected you and also your performing.
Well, lots. I mean, it was, you know, of course, lots of French people made the parallel between 9/11 and the attacks, especially the November attacks, not so much Charlie Hebdo, but even, you know, the November 13th attacks were more on just could be anybody kind of feeling. And I mean, that definitely shook up the Parisians, and in a very similar way that the 9/11 shook up New Yorkers. All of a sudden, people were looking each other in the eye, which is weird. You know, it's like that's a bad sign. If a Parisian's looking you in the eye, it's, you know, smiling at you, it's weird. So there was definitely that transformation. And
like togetherness,
didn't last
you
mean? For long either.
Yeah.
Which is really weird. You know, it's all of a sudden, what, you mean we're together in something? You know, we're
solidarity? What do you mean?
a month ago, would just like knock you over. Now they're actually looking at you. And so, there was definitely that transformation. It didn't last very long. I mean, Paris is very back to normal now. And, but yeah, I mean, comics talk about it pretty quickly.
Because the Parisians are a political people. I mean, they're known for the marching. Yeah. They love to march about everything. So you would think it would transfer over to their art.
They're very politically conscious, and it's a relief coming from the States, you know, and you know, it's even too much sometimes. But so the comics were talking about it pretty quickly, and really? That was fun in different ways. You know, some comics who kind of have like a dark side took it in a dark way. Other comics, you know, like I had a few jokes about it. I mean, like very basic stuff, you know, just, you know, I said like everyone in the States was worried about me. Everyone called me, you know, people I haven't talked to in 15 years called me. Even I had an ex call me and asked to know if I was alive. Of course, she was disappointed with the answer. You know, I was just like a little joke like that. It's, you know, that one is kind of a cute little joke, but, you know.
Sure. Pretty safe. That's pretty safe, that one,
Pretty safe, you know what I mean? So, you know, that's one joke I had. You know, other people, I also had another joke, which is darker. You know, I said like, yeah, how many people, like 150 dead in Paris? You know, you guys, small. Okay, I'm trying to translate it back to take this. Like, oh, you guys are playing small. You know, we had 3,000. You know, which is an angle that was, you know, borderline. You
sure.
Know, that went well 50% of the time. But anyway, like those jokes were topical for like 2 or 3 weeks. But like
and then now, done. Yeah.
Yeah, like now, if you would say those jokes, unless you have a more broad vision of the whole thing, those jokes don't work anymore. It's been too long now. You know, they've moved on.
Gone, forgotten. I think that's another thing about social media is that it's good and bad. I mostly think it's bad because I'm a purist when it comes to art. But it also moves trends so fast that literally it's on to the next fucking topic. You know, like, I mean, in 9/11, we didn't have the Twitter stuff we have now. I mean, people sat on that shit for a good year. I remember hearing guys do jokes about that for a year or two after.
Yeah. So. I don't know if it's also, it's a mix of social media. I think it's also a mix of the Parisians. I think they can move on. I think they kind of like New Yorkers, you know. I think they're like, okay, let's, if we dwell on it too long, they're getting us, the more we dwell on it, the more they're getting it to us. So we have to.
So you believe it's the practicality of the culture, too, is that that's a tribute to them.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And I think that, after a while, they want to hear other things, you know. And so, yeah.
And that's your job, to give them other things to hear.
Exactly.
Hey, man, I'm telling you, this was awesome. I feel like we could talk for another 2 hours about everything because I love chopping it up with comics. Please tell everybody where they can find you and how they can hit you up and follow your stuff.
Yeah, everything. I mean, because I'm actually changing venues now, so the best way is to go on my website, which is sebmarx.com, S-E-B-M-A-R-X. All the new info will be on my website. And, well, I have a YouTube channel, Facebook page. You know, if you type Sebastian Marx, you'll come across it. And you type New York Comedy Nights in Paris, you'll come across it. If you type New Yorker in Paris, which is my one-man show, you'll come across me. So all those.
What's your Twitter handle again? Let them know your Twitter handle.
My Twitter is SmarxMarks. So S-M-A-R-X-M-A-R-X. SmarxMarks.
And all that stuff's on the website, too.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, awesome. It's on my website. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean. All right, man. Dude, this was awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. I can't wait to have you on again. I think I might come out to Paris just
whenever
so I can watch people not laugh at my jokes at you well all across the United States, just to humble myself.
Well, I'd be delighted to have you on the show. It'd be great.
Thanks, man. Talk to you soon. That's that. That is that. I can't wait to go to Paris. I'm going to do shows. I'm going to become a famous Parisian stand-up. Be the next Richard Pryor of Paris. Richard Pryor, that's going to be my name. Thank you, Sebastian. You're awesome. If you're listening, you're an awesome dude, good dude, talented dude. Go follow Sebastian. Go support his work. If you're in Paris, not only go to the shows, go to many shows. Make sure you follow Sebastian Marx on Twitter and the Instagram and whatever else and like and retweet and all that fun stuff to make people feel special because Sebastian deserves that because he is special. He was talking to me in a coffee shop, too. Doesn't get any more Parisian than that. All right. As always, you can find me at Josh Accardo and then the show at Slam Pig Podcast. Now, that's on Twitter and the Instagram. And you can always email the show with any comments at slampigpodcast@gmail.com. Also, very excited to announce that we might be working with a very major affiliate very soon. I can't really say that out loud yet because the deal has not gone through completely, but I wanted to give you some good news, you know? Because if you're listening to the show, then you support me and you probably want to see it do well, and I appreciate you, so you deserve to be kind of in the loop as much as I can put you in the loop. So now you're in the loop. Kind of. All right, so do me a favor. Tell your buddies, tell your friends, subscribe and rate. I mean, we get a lot of downloads and people have subscribed, but it never hurts to have that visible. So make sure you subscribe and rate. Give us a 5. Or whatever, I don't know. Do what you gotta do. Come on. Be a part of the movement. Take it easy.